Author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Siebel, and for you ladies, I think, especially if you're looking for work, you're going to find my guest today, a woman that has taken a great deal of effort, energy, and time to put together some profound positionings of thinking, especially for women. For those of you who are male who would be listening to the show today, what benefit would this be? Well, it might enable you to work more effectively with the women that are in your environment. And if you own your own business, I think anything and everything that we can learn that can help us do better, whatever we are involved with, is an advantage. My guest today is Sally Helgeson, and her book is called The Female Vision, Women's Real Power at Work. She and Julie Johnson put this material together. And Sally, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want my audience to know that you have written 5 books. You are also a national speaker. And Julie is a graduate of Harvard Business School and has been involved in executive coaching and has actually been involved with a number of women that have reached the Fortune 500 list, which is quite an accomplishment. When did the 500 list for women get started?
The Fortune 500 list for women, I believe, got started in the late 70s, and it has really changed over the years because there were so few women in positions of real authority and influence in the 70s that mm-hmm. it was hard to get 500. There still has been slow progress in terms of the very highest level of leadership among women in large companies that are on the Fortune 500 list. But there are so many women who are in second-tier positions, who are CFOs or CIOs, that the list has really expanded.
Also, there are women that have decided, rather than being in the corporate environment, which to many of them has been almost offensive, they have chosen to start their own companies.
Well, that has been one of the most significant trends of the last 20 years. Women starting their own enterprises, leaving organizations, sometimes often selling their own services back to organizations that formerly employed them. But women-owned businesses have, for, I believe, 18 years now, been growing at a faster rate than male-owned businesses. They mm-hmm. tend not to be quite as large, and they are certainly not as highly capitalized. But part of that may be that women often go into business for themselves for slightly different reasons. They mm-hmm. want more opportunity to control their pace and work in a way that is really comfortable for them and more accords with their vision.
I agree. And I think interestingly enough, there are many men that are finding that they would like to work the same way. And I just think it's really a fascinating phenomena that we are seeing evolving due to this thinking of the hardcore, the man in the gray suit type of synopsis that just this is the way it is. People come out of business schools. They've been indoctrinated with certain formats of thinking. This is the way, it's either this way or the highway type of thing. And many, many women have said, I just am not interested in that. I want to be able to get up, go to my company, enjoy my employees, enjoy my environment, and like you said, be more pliable. And I have found in talking with many men that this is something that they're finding works better for them as well. It's not reached the big, big level yet. Because I think there's places for all of it. But it's a fascinating period to be in business.
I agree with that. And I do think that one of the things, and we found this in our research, but in a number of research works that have been done in the last couple of years in the younger about the younger generation at work, we're really finding in terms of a lot of perceptions and values, less of a difference between men and women than was true 20 or 30 years ago. And it makes sense because boys and girls are raised often in more similar ways now. And let's face it, even if they're not, we all now use the same technologies. We use them at work. We use them at home. And this is the first time in human history that that's been true. So I think that, and we see it especially in the younger generation, there's more commonality of aspiration. And then, of course, the technologies, because they are so powerful and so increasingly inexpensive, do give people more and more options to go out on their own. 40 years ago, it was much more difficult to start a business, much higher capital requirements, but today you have so much computing, math, communication power that you can put on your desktop for a few thousand dollars. It's really changed the game. And I think that's put a lot of pressure on organizations in terms of being able to retain a lot of the best people, because people today just have more options.
Well, I think it's a whole different thinking positioning. We have various aspects here. Let's start off with how women see things.
Yeah.
Now, lots of times, I was engaged in a conversation just this morning about a topic, I won't go into it right now, relating to certain things, and there were these attitudes being expressed, and I was in conversation with two males. And the two males were expressing their opinion, and I said, I don't agree. And this is why I do not agree. Now, they're of the thought patterning, they enjoy having women that don't agree with them. But it is very important to step outside of paradigms. And there are things that you will observe if you're a good listener, and I know you are because of what you've written, and you observe people and how they will, even though they may say something different, their demeanor and the absolutes that they have drawn as paradigms in their space, they're not wanting to let go of their paradigms, no matter how they think that they might be compromising in their positioning to satisfy someone else that may be coming at them from a different parallel, if you will. And it is really fun to observe. It's absolutely amazing. Did you encounter this in your research?
Oh, we certainly did. What spurred our research was we wanted to try to understand why more successful women weren't getting to the very top of big organizations, why so many of them were leaving. Julie, as an executive coach, heard in her practice often where clients would say, you know, it's just not worth it staying here. And when you analyzed that, you thought, well, that's interesting. This woman might have a job that would be considered worth it by most definitions in terms of the salary that she was being paid, in terms of the position she occupied. So for her to say something like, it's just not worth it, might indicate, we figured, a slightly different value system. So we decided that what we wanted to do was to look at differences in what men and women perceived and defined and pursued in terms of satisfaction at work, where there were differences and where there were overlaps, because of course there are many overlaps as well. But in trying to identify what some of the differences were, we kept bumping up against a reality that women often felt as if their best ideas and their best observations were not necessarily valued in the workplace. Either they weren't translating them or articulating them well enough, or the way the workplace was structured and the way values were assumed to operate, it was just quite different to present a different kind of perspective. So that became our motivation behind doing the book. We wanted to discover what it was that was in many cases different about what women saw, that is, what they noticed, how they analyzed what they noticed and what they valued about what they noticed, not in order to keep a gender war going, but to bring more understanding and information to the workplace in general, to help women get better at articulating what they noticed and recognizing the value of it, for organizations to maybe open the shutters or the blinders and say, hey, there's information out there that we're missing. Let's get better at bringing it in. And to also help men, as you said in the beginning of the show, who are champions of women at work and who might want to have a better understanding of how they might work more effectively and more creatively with women on the job.
Many times it has been my experience as well as my observation to learn how to communicate verbally within an environment where you may have people whose mindsets, male or female, are in entirely different valleys of thought than what you would ever imagine.
Right.
And it is really important to ask if the picture is clear that you are trying to express. And I can remember, and partially it was because, and it's something I even deal with today, partially it was because of the way I was raised. I was raised, girls are not to talk, they're to keep their mouths shut, submit to authority, blah, 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 this garbage. And when you would articulate something and someone comes back at you and says, that has to be one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. What in the world are you thinking of, woman? I mean, I'm sure you've heard these statements made. I know my audience, which is mostly female. They have said, oh, gee, why should I even talk to this person? It takes you a while to be able to realize that one of the reasons this person may not be able to hear what you're saying is that you may be talking Cadillac and they're in a Model T Ford.
That is exactly what inspired us to write this book. We had both had experiences. I remember I was working as a speechwriter in an organization, and I was in a meeting with the CEO, and they were trying to figure out some way of raising their visibility in the community we were part of. It was New York City, where I was working, And I had a suggestion that I had made based on a conversation I'd had with my sister, who was a high school teacher, about partnering with one of the local high schools.
Oh, great idea.
We were having problems recruiting. I mean, this shows you this was a number of years ago. We were having problems recruiting enough telephone operators from the city schools. And I thought, why don't we have a program like this? And I cited something that my sister said in the meeting. And when I got out of the meeting, my boss came up to me and he said, don't you ever do that again. He said, first of all, if you have an idea, you run it by me first. You don't bring it up in that meeting. I see that. I could see why he had a point. But the second thing he said is, never cite your sister, who's a high school teacher, as a source of anything in front of our CEO. It makes you look weak.
And oh, that's ridiculous.
I know. And I took that in myself and I thought, oh, I made a terrible mistake there. Or maybe it wasn't that great an idea. Maybe I kind of went off. I didn't explain myself that well. And you know what? About 3 years later, a big business tycoon in New York City came up with the same idea of pairing companies with with local high schools.
Mm-hmm.
And my company jumped on board as a follower, not a leader. And that experience really taught me something. I thought, you know what? I need to be better at standing up for and articulating what my own ideas are. And you know what? I left that company because I didn't feel that I was able to contribute my best ideas. I felt that there was always an inhibition because I'd gotten so shut down. And as the years have gone by, I've learned that a lot of other women have been in that position. So that's one of the things that I was trying to address.
I've found that there have been people, male or female, that have a concept and an awareness of what's out on the street. They can sit in a pizza parlor and listen to the people talking to them and they go, wow, do you know, who ever heard of that? And they listen, they're aware. And then you go to someone or you present something and they sneer. And they'll, now I've seen this with women as well as men.
Yes.
And to be able to convey a concept and an idea so that someone turns off their mental noise.
Yes.
Of their own busy thinking, to listen is important. Subjective observation. These were two words that you put in your book.
Yeah.
That I just think say what needs to be said so very, very well. Now let's talk about how there are definite differences between the way men think and the way women think. I have had male executives as guests that in the past have said, women need to think like men. This is how they do it. This is what they do. These are the agendas. There's a disservice when men and women will not respect variables, when they will not look at the fact that you've got to be adaptable and flexible. When I am in the company of women professionals who try to mimic the way men do things, it doesn't come across well. When men try to say, "Well, I'm just going to do this just the way the women do," they can't do it. It doesn't.
Yeah.
We're wired differently, and it's meant to be a benefit, not a detriment. But only if you're willing to pay attention. What are your feelings on that?
Well, I'm fascinated by what the gentleman said when he said that women need to think like men. I would say no. I would say women need to think the way they think, but they need to understand also that it may be different from how men think so that they can communicate better with men. And by the same token, men need a better understanding of how women think so they can better communicate with women. Our workplaces today are very, very diverse. They're diverse in terms of gender, but they're also diverse in terms of ethnicity, national background, in terms of age. You have organizations now where 60-year-olds report to 36-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very diverse workforce. So that anybody who imagines that there's one model of thinking and acting that everybody else has to adapt to is really living back in the Mad Men era. And an organization that tries to operate that like that is going to cut out a lot of valuable information. And this is something that more and more of the best leaders are really recognizing. We saw a quote shortly after the book, The Female Vision, came out. One of the concepts we talk about in it is that women tend to have what we call broad spectrum notice. That's notice a lot of things going on at the
mm-hmm,
same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas men tend to have a much more focused notice on one thing at the same time, and that these are demonstrable, neuroscientists can see in male and female brains. So this isn't just anecdotal or observation. This is real. And we were talking about the value for organizations of having both broad spectrum and focused notice. And we came across a quote from the chairman of GE, and they were asking him in the interview what competency he was going to be looking for in leaders in the future. And he said the number one competency will be an ability to see around the corners.
Mm-hmm.
And that got us both so excited because we were thinking, yes, to see around the corners, you need both broad spectrum and focused notice. So the time has come for what women notice, for how women see things, to be incorporated in the understanding of how organizations operate. It's only going to make organizations more effective. It's going to give women an opportunity to be more authentic and make better contributions, and everybody's going to benefit.
I do not think, I'll never forget, and this is going to sound rather perhaps offensive to some people, but I'll have to tell you an experience that I had. I was in New York City. I had published my award-winning children's book, and I was exhibiting in a particular show. And I had someone come up to me who was watching me and my interaction with the public, and I was very busy in my booth, and I was talking to all kinds of people. This very tall, East Indian type of man, he was dressed in a Nehru type of jacket, came up to me, and he said, "I would like to be able to help you, and you know, people say all kinds of things. So I said, well, why don't you come back later when it's a little bit slow and we can chat? And he said, you know what? You're never really going to succeed a great deal. And the only reason is you're too nice. He said, you're too nice. You need to be a bee with an itch, okay? You need to be that, and you don't have steel balls. That's exactly what he said to me. Excuse me if that offends some people. I can remember looking at this man and going, what a statement to make to someone. And I
thought, was he trying to sell you something?
Well, he said, you're just too nice. You have to be cutthroat because that's the way the world is. To be able to market and promote.
Well, what was
and this
his interest? Was he trying
and,
to tell you something?
Well, I think he wanted to probably have me work with him. But I can remember thinking to myself, and I discussed this with a professional woman that I knew, had known for years, and she said, you know what, Donna? Someone told me that when I went into real estate. They had, you know, this is cutthroat, and this is what you do, and this is how it is, and you're going to be rated with a capital B if you're really successful. And she said, that is the biggest lie. And I said, isn't it interesting what people will say? I do not choose to be different from who I am. And if I cannot be gracious and courteous and pleasant to people, what in the world, why in the world am I going to try to change my coat of colors? I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But that's the mentality that's dished out to men, but especially to women.
It's dished out to both. And, you know, it's so interesting because one of the things, and we saw this in the big data study we ran out, that this was one of the real similarities that men and women shared, is that both men and women had a very strong desire to feel authentic at work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, again, when you look at these Gen Y studies and these studies of millennials, you find an increasing desire of people to feel authentic at work. And I think, you know, we live in a very synthetic kind of environment, and a lot of things are virtual, and a lot of our communications are not face-to-face. And I think people are really longing to connect, and to connect in an authentic way at work, so that platitudes about, you know, you've got to be X, Y, or Z to succeed are very, very outdated. In an era when people want to be authentic at work, those are not helpful observations, because if a person is not authentically in that model, telling them they're going to fail is not going to be helpful, and it's just going to make, you know, really you look foolish, I think. So
So I
think we've moved beyond in 2011, which we're a couple 2 weeks away from. I think we've moved beyond this sort of one-size-fits-all behavioral template for success in organizations. And in the same way that the technology enables us to have very different and individual styles of communication, and we have so many more choices than what we do now, there's no reason to think that this one-size-fits-all way of defining what a leader or what leadership behavior looks like has any relevance anymore.
To me, a good leader is someone that walks the walk. They are an inspiration. They are going to be interested in the diversity of skills and talents their employees have. And within a company or within your structure, you want to keep them informed. You want to let them know exactly what's going on. In today's world, there is such a sense of separation because of technology.
Yeah.
However, within a structure, human beings typically, it has been my observation, really like to have a feeling of association, men and women both. They like to have a sense of pride in what they do. And I don't care what generation it is. I have seen this with people that are in their 90s, whether it's with their church or a company that they used to work for, or you have someone that's younger that is really wanting to make their way in the world. And so many of the younger generation, they're not interested in job hopping. They would like to be able to be in an environment where they can grow and expand. And I think there is a sense of loyalty.
Yeah.
There are many, many people that aspire for that. It may not be the same picture as in the 1900s or the 1940s or the 1960s or 70s, but the heart of the human being is still the heart of the human being.
Yeah.
The needs are the same as then. Let's talk about money a little bit. You have a story in here about financial analyst Meredith Whitney.
Yes.
And I love this story because she made a forecast. You need to tell us a little bit about Meredith, but she made a forecast in 2007 that Citigroup would have to drop its dividend because of a leaky balance sheet. And we all know all the history of what's been going on in these last 2 years. It's absolutely horrific. Tell us about Meredith and what was going on with her.
It's so interesting. Meredith Whitney is an example of a phenomenon that really occurred throughout the early part of the 2000s, which is women who were in senior financial services positions warning about problems to come. Meredith Whitney was probably one of the most visible because she had one of the most successful analysis companies in the world. And she was able to run an analysis on Citigroup and on a number of financial institutions in which she said, you know what, these numbers just aren't making sense. And there was a lot of pushback against what she said. People were saying, those are the numbers. Numbers always make sense. What's wrong with you? They put the numbers out there. That's how the numbers add up. And she said, you know, these numbers, she said, the numbers may add up, but there's something wrong with the numbers. So she was really ahead of her time in forecasting some of the problems that the so-called too-big-to-fail banks ran into beginning in late summer 2008. And I think the financial crisis of 2008 was really what spurred Julie Johnson, my writing partner on this project, and I to write the book, because we heard from so many women who said, you know, I worked in that organization. I worked in that analyst shop. We knew those numbers didn't add up, but whenever we tried to talk about it, we weren't listened to. We were told that we weren't sophisticated enough, or we didn't really get the complicated algorithms that our peers were using in order to judge why these derivative products and subprime mortgages really did have value. And a lot of these women left those organizations ahead of the crisis, ahead of the meltdown. If you would look at some of the senior ranks in some of the biggest companies that ran into trouble, you would see a significant attrition of senior women out of their ranks in the years before the crisis. As there was more and more skepticism, and I'm sure there certainly was among certain men as well in organizations, but more and more skepticism about the numbers. And that gets to your point, what you talked about, subjective context. Women often tend to judge, to make decisions about what they see, bringing a little more subjective experience to it rather than strictly relying on the data and numbers. They can often bring a little more skepticism to data and numbers, or believe that they should be put in a larger analytical frame, and that the lack of this of an understanding of the value of this was one of the reasons behind the financial meltdown.
Well, that and the absolute corruption that went on, you know, with so much of the stuff and the hiding of things, and there's just so much to it. But here was a woman that said, "Hey, folks, pay attention,
right?
Because the crash is coming."
Yeah.
We are not going to try to milquetoast it. It does not add up. This is it. And that always takes courage. It takes a tremendous courage. The ones that want to cover up don't want people that see things clearly. They don't, especially when you're dealing in mega billions, they really don't want anybody to look under their financial skirts. They just don't want to do it.
And it was so fascinating because, to some extent, you know, and you had other women who were, you know, in senior government positions who were also highly skeptical of this. in 2008. And what it was reminding me a lot of was 2003, when you had women in the positions of being the whistleblowers on the big scandals at Enron and at WorldCom and at Tyco. And in fact, Time Magazine had a cover story in 2004 of three women who had called out those scandals, especially Sharon Watkins at Enron, as the persons of the year. And they talked about, you know, the fact that they were all women was just a coincidence. It really had nothing to do with anything different in terms of what women saw and valued, and really begged to differ here, because what those women did was they really looked at numbers that appeared to add up and said, you know what, there's a lot going on here that's not being told. And they had the courage to tell those stories.
Well, I think it's fabulous. There is so much good information in your book, and I know we're just about out of time, but I want to quote a few, and I'm just taking this as at random out of your book, that companies owned by women are twice as likely to stay in business as those owned by men, while those owned by women of color are four times more likely to survive. Female entrepreneurs also have a higher rate of loan repayment, and female entrepreneurs tend to be fiscally conservative and resistant to assuming a lot of debt.
Yes, and
this
those things are all tied.
Right.
Yes,
these are things that this one international bank found with women in Bangladesh. They gave them these micro loans. The women were, when they trained them, were so responsive because they have been under somebody else's feet for so long, and that they were ending up putting their kids through school. They were able to afford to take care of their children, their families, and surpassing many of the men, and it's had a tremendous impact on the economy of that small country.
Right.
Here we are
in the United
States.
Yeah. The Grameen Bank, and that also has served as such a model for microloans in the developing world, because they would find that women, one, had a higher repayment loan, partly because they were less willing to take on risk, and secondly, that the way they spent the money would have much more positive outcome on the economy as a whole, because they tended to invest more in their children's education.
This book is so loaded with details and information that anyone, male or female, that reads it, you're going to find that your paradigms, if you're female, you're going to find that you can change your self-image, your paradigms of thinking, and it's not going to have to take a major whack with a huge electric mental saw. It is something, it takes recognition that you're fully capable of handling certain things. You can learn. And one of the best ways that you can do anything is to invest in reading material that's going to educate you. Guys, this is an insight into studies that have been done and research, and it will really, if you're trying to work with women in a company, if you're wanting to be able to understand how to work with women, by golly, this is a wonderful book. The Female Vision, Women's Real Power at Work. Sally, we're out of time. What is your website?
It is sallyhelgeson.com. And Helgeson, good Norwegian name, spelled with all E's, H-E-L-G-E-S-E-N.
Sally, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Thank you so much for being with me. Happy holidays to you as well. And I look forward to your next book. You'll have to give me a copy.
I'll definitely get you a copy. Thank you, Donna, and happy holidays.
Thank you, dear. This is Donna Sebo, sallyhelgeson.com. Check out this book, Female Vision. It's a must-have in your library, a good thing to pass along, too, to the younger generation. Donna Sebo will be right back.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Are you concerned about nutrition?
Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And, hey, if you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Okay, who else have we got on this week? We've got Richard Hart tomorrow. How to keep your daughter safe. Now, this may be talking about young women, young girls, but I'll tell you what, it's good for anyone, even young men, but especially girls. The stories of abductions and other things, this is nothing new. It's always gone on. A little bit of common sense can go a long way, but sometimes girls are very, very naive. So Richard Hart is going to be my guest. He has a wonderful, wonderful recommendations. And as a man, this has been a very important, you might say, purpose for him to be able to get this information out to families. So I wanted to let you know about that. And then we're going to be traveling via technology to the good old land of Scotland. Yes. Bob Curran is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about man-made monsters. Oh, Bob is such a doll. He's been on my show before, and he is a historian. So he comes up with some of the wildest points of information in history relating to myths that have been carried forward and some of the fictitious aspects that have become extremely popular. So we're going to be talking with Bob in Scotland. Now, don't forget, if you're wanting to find out about who's coming up, all you have to do is come right here to bbsradio.com, station 1. Check on the Donna Sebo show and the little button that says show information. You'll be able to check and see about those individuals that are going to be my guests. And they come from around the world, bringing the best of what they have to offer in a moment to you, the listening audience. And don't forget, you can always go in and check out those archives, too. Well, one of the things I'm going to be sharing with you, should time allow today, is about a wonderful dog named Ginger. So I'm going to share that story. I also wanted to give you the rest of the zodiac. Aha! Yes, let me dig it out here. Oh, here it is. Because there are 3 signs left in the winter zodiac: Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces. We've covered all of the other signs, so I wanted to be sure to get that done to today, if possible. So, for those of you under the sign of Capricorn, you happy little goats, you, well, your domestic responsibilities, guess what? Yes, they're going to be getting a little bit more intense during winter, but I'll tell you what, you're going to find that things are really going to start lightening up for you as of February, first part of February. So, take care of the little things. It's all right. You've got domestic responsibilities, whatever is going on with a family. Just know, enjoy your holiday season. Don't take things so seriously. tie up any loose ends that may have to be taken care of, and then just enjoy the lighter mood that's going to be coming around in February. Now, what about money? The green stuff. Well, for those of you born under the sign of Capricorn, you're going to be able not only to represent yourself very well, but you're going to find that you're really, really excited about stepping up to new challenges and opportunities that are going to be right in front of you. You're going to find that your dedication, your sense of responsibility, your follow-through that the Capricorn sign is noted for is going to pay off. You're going to make very good money. And job opportunity is right there if you're willing to step up to the plate. Now, you're going to be involved with your community and family quite a bit, but you're going to find that because of some extra money that's going to be coming your way, you might want to tuck that money aside so you can take that special trip that really means a lot to you. You're going to be having an opportunity to really enjoy travel if you want, but you're going to have to save for it. Now, under the sign of Aquarius, whoa, boy, are you questioning yourself. You are really doing a lot of introspection. When it comes to the heart, you're just not going to go by whatever spontaneous happening might be representing itself to you. You're really going to think about what you value when it comes to romance and family, and you're not going to put up with anything that is not going to be of the best level possible for yourself. Career, you're getting a lot of support. You have a chance to really get a very fine job. And don't be afraid to get those resumes out now. I know it's the holiday season, but get them out, those of you under the sign of Aquarius. And realize that you may end up in 2011 having a better economic patterning, so get that savings started. I don't care if you start with just $5. Start it and be consistent with it, and you'll be surprised at how much money you'll accumulate in your savings account. Traveling. Little weekend trips will be great. Also, you might be developing an interest in a hobby that you might have had a little bit of time for, but you're going to say you want to give more time to it. So that's very, very good. Those under the sign of Pisces, well, you are going to find your social life needs some improving. Also, you need to think about the environments that you're going to want to put yourself into. Being just a party person isn't going to cut it for you. You really want to expand your social circle and expand the involvement with people of different modalities of thoughts and environments. And I want to encourage you to do that because it will turn up your mental receptivity to new things and to improving your own environment. Now, you're going to have to watch your money. Be on a budget and hold to it. I heard someone of a political positioning saying, I hate the budget. And I thought, well, it's a good thing you finally woke up that you had to pay attention to making one. This person was spending, you know, it's like a million here and a million there. After a while, you might be talking real money. Yeah, right. So anyway, fiscal responsibility is very important for those under the sign of Pisces. So if you're job hunting, if you're feeling a pinch on your wallet, count your blessings, look at what you can do, just suck it up financially and just be a tough person. Pull in that financial belt and say, wait a minute, do I really need this right now? And you'll probably find you don't. And so just get into the habit of thinking differently about money and you'll end up with more money in your account as a result. Traveling, it seems like you may have an opportunity to travel overseas, but it's going to be a while. So again, money is an issue for those under the sign of Pisces. Let's be on the side of being conservative here. Don't worry. You're going to have your time of opportunity. If you pay attention to how you work with your money now, you'll have more in your pocket later. Donna Sebo here. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. 888-815-9756 is a telephone number that you can call into. We're going to take a break for just a moment here. When I come back, I have two things I want to share with you. One, I want to share a story about Ginger, a very special dog. And then two, I want to share with you a story of a Christmas miracle that took place in another part of the world, Johannesburg, in fact. So when we come back, I'll share a little bit of that. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. While we were off the air, I was chatting with my engineer, Seth, and I said, I've got the cutest picture of a little squirrel in front of me inside of a hole of in a tree, and there's all of these evergreens and berries around this little character. Whoever caught this shot was just absolutely in the right place at the right time. And Rhoda Ward, wrote this cute little poem. She says, the gray squirrel scampers pine tree to pine tree, limb to limb, puffy cheeks laden with treasures. It's just another chestnut day in the forest. I just love that. And with a photo, it's just absolutely adorable. Things happen sometimes in life, and we are in awe of how things synchronize and how they work out. This is a story about a dog, Ginger, that really touched my heart, and I think it will touch yours. The circumstances were a bit unusual, and it took place during the Christmas season. And the story is by Jill Leah. This is her personal experience, and she lives in Florida, and she said her garage was just filled with all kinds of Christmas things, and she had put her car in the driveway. So when she was working with all the stuff, after she had finished with it, she said when they went outside, they found that all the car windows were frosted with dew. Well, in Florida, how often does that happen? Not very often. So she said, I took my little girl and I put her in a car seat, and I was getting very impatient because it was taking a while for the windows to clear. And she only had about 15 minutes before she was going to get to work. And she said she had to take her daughter to her mother's house and then make the trip to the office. So she said, oh, to herself, oh, my goodness, I'm going to be late. And she hated to be late. Who hasn't gone through that? Things happen, and you're delayed. Well, she said, little did she realize how important that delay was going to be. Now, she said she had pulled out of her driveway and driven maybe about 200 feet when she noticed something very, very odd. There was a neighbor's dog whose name was Ginger. Ginger was standing all by herself in her driveway, and her leash was hanging from her collar. Now, this really disturbed Jill, because this wasn't like Ginger. Ginger was never, ever without her mistress. Well, her neighbor's name was Elsa. That was Ginger's owner. And she said she would always take her dog out for a stroll every morning. And both Elsa and her dog Ginger were afflicted with arthritis. Every day, though, they were out, whether it was raining or sunshiny, they would be walking side by side on the sidewalk. Everybody in the neighborhood saw this, and they were loved by everyone there. Now, Jill said something that I found interesting. She said she couldn't quite understand what made her slow down in driving by Elsa's house. She passed the driveway, she sees Ginger, and then her eyes moved to the side of the road. And what she saw just horrified her. Ginger's owner, Elsa, was face down in a ditch by the curb. Oh, she stopped the car immediately, and she went over to Elsa right away. Fortunately, she was not harmed, but she was terribly, terribly frightened, and she was crying. So anyway, Jill got her little girl and out of the car, and together they took Elsa up to her house, and then Elsa started telling them what happened. She said, I was taking care of my empty trash cans when I slipped and fell, and I couldn't get up, no matter how hard I tried. My muscles just wouldn't work for me. And she said a lot of people had passed by her as she was laying there in this pit of ground, but she was behind shrubbery, and she couldn't be heard by them because their windows were up, their air conditioning was on, and nobody could see her. Well, Jill said, I just realized I could have driven past her, but if I hadn't seen Ginger with her collar on and her leash loose, I probably wouldn't have stopped. I just knew that Elsa would not be without Ginger, and Ginger wouldn't be sitting there so attentively without good reason. So, of course, she asks Elsa, where is Ginger, Elsa? She said, Ginger? She died 2 days ago. Well, the chills were dancing up and down Jill's spine big time. And she said, oh, Elsa, Ginger was here. I saw her. I saw her in the driveway, and I knew it was so unusual. That's what made me slow down, and that's how I was able to see you. Sometimes things happen that we never expect that enable the opportunity to serve or to help somebody. Getting a little bit late getting out, as it turned out, being late, being forced to slow down, and seeing the spirit of a dog in a driveway of its owner. That dog had died 2 days before. Makes you think, doesn't it? I think so. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. And I told you I had one more story. This is a true story. Annie Bailey, Mary Ellen, has a story in her book, Christmas Filled with Miracles. And I wanted to share it with you because miracles happen everywhere. Now, what Annie said is that her dad, Sidney McMaster, he was born in 1893. He was born into a family that had six other children. He was number seven. And no, he wasn't. He was the third youngest. Excuse me. So there were seven kids. He was the third youngest. Now, the father of this family left the children when they were young, and as a result, her dad had to leave school at the age of nine so he could go to work to help support his mother and two younger siblings. His older siblings had done the very same thing before they had grown up and moved out of the home. She said, my dad got a job as an office messenger, and he also sold programs at the circus part-time. Now, one day, he met the headmaster of the local school, who offered to give him tuition so he could take classes. He was able to take courses at night until he completed his schooling. Now, in Johannesburg, South Africa, that's where he was born. It was a mining town when he was growing up. On Christmas Eve, the town would become alive with the spirit of Christmas. People just had a wonderful time shopping for the Christmas dinners, their gifts, but it was very hard times for Anne's dad and his family. Now, he was very upset because there weren't going to be any celebrations in their home. There was no money. They had nothing. But this is what happened. When he was walking down the main street amidst the hustle and bustle, he saw a sock. It was tied up in a knot. It was laying in the gutter beside the sidewalk. Something prompted him to move it with his foot, and when he felt something heavy inside, he bent down to pick up this dirty sock. To his amazement and delight, it was loaded with coins. He was astonished, and in the midst of all the people that were rushing around him, he had found and noticed the sock himself. It was a treasure. Full of coins, well, it answered his prayers, and he hurried to the nearest food store, bought a turkey and a few other items for a celebration. He also bought a small gift for each member of the family, his mother and his younger sister and brother. Now, because of this Christmas miracle, Anne said her father's faith in God became very strong. The miracle made him determined to improve his career and to continue his studies at night. He got a degree in accountancy and company secretarial, and eventually became secretary to Sir Abe Bailey, who was a well-known mining magnate. He continued to pursue his studies and become state manager of one of the biggest mining houses in South Africa, the Anglo-American Corporation. By the time he retired, he had worked for 45 years. With his determination and very strong belief system, he had been able to send his entire family of six children to private Catholic schools, which were the best private schools in South Africa. He always had compassion for the poor and was a member of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, visiting the poor and sick and collecting and distributing food parcels and clothing for more than 40 years. And every Christmas, he would tell us the story of the sock and of his Christmas miracle. My strong belief in miracles and angels came from him. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous time wherever you're going, whatever you're doing. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to the Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.